I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ up there in
New York City.
Not Van Graaff's own. John Taylor is back. John, good evening, sir. How are you?
When you do that intro, sometimes I keep waiting for it to turn into the Mike and the Mad Dog. You know when Mad Dog would do the, hey, good afternoon, everybody, or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. I keep waiting for it to turn into that sometimes, and it just doesn't.
Yeah, it's not gonna
do that. What I'm trying to say is you need to be more like Chris Russo. I think that could really kick this podcast up to the next level if you imitate America's foremost and favorite loud talker guy. Actually, is that even Mad Dog, or is that Stephen A. Smith at this point?
I think they're both. I mean, on the same show all the time. I think that's part of the reason for the.
How does the moderator for that handle that?
I don't think you really do. Can you be called a moderator?
No, you're just a victim. Honestly, like whoever works that job, whoever that poor person is, should get hazard pay. Like literally,
it's not
their ears just constantly like.
It seems to me like it's an exhausting existence to be that extroverted or that loud or that, like, that's just not me at all. So when you're talking about like the whole Russo, like there are even people who can put it on, right? Like back in, like there's, I'm sure, so many radio personalities over the years that have just trained themselves to be on like that during radio show. And then they're back to, okay, normal voice and back to who I am the rest of the day. I have none of those qualities. I am very much a cool, calm, collected NPR type voice. As someone, multiple people have told me I'm like a host, like an NPR host. So it's a little bit different.
You've got to figure out the Corey Flintoff impression then, where you just have that sonorous but stately monotone.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, for the guys who patter themselves off Stephen A. or Mad Dog, like, or your Jim Rome's, your Jim's Rome, or your who's that other guy who spends his whole life yelling about stuff he doesn't actually care about?
It's a lot of people.
Yeah, but the other one who's famous and talks a lot. Whatever his name is, I don't care. Like, at what point does the facade start to slip? Like, when do you irreparably and irretrievably cross the line from that's who I'm modeling myself after, too. This is just what I am now.
I hope I never have to answer that question, John.
Colin Cowherd, that's as useless. Oh. That guy sucks.
Now to take
an ad break for your newest sponsor, the Colin Cowherd podcast.
I just look at everything for me. There's stuff that's just not for me, where clearly it's popular for a lot of people. And I'm like, I'm a big, like, the older I get, John, the more I'm like, if it doesn't affect me or if it's not my niche or it's not my jam, it's okay. I don't really worry about it. I don't get annoyed. I just listen to what I like. Now, if you come at me and you're like, oh, well, how do you like so-and-so? Like, well, I mean, I like jazz. Yeah, I like Sonny Rollins. I like Bill Evans Trio. Like, I listen to NPR. I listen to The New Yorker. I read, like, I have my, look, here's what I've got next to me. I'm reading The Topeka School. It's a great novel thus far. I'm reading.
And yet the latest, here you are.
Yeah.
Talking about sports on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of following your true passion, which is to be hosting a podcast for N+1 or Granta or something like that.
I think that, I mean, I would, that's like one of those side projects one day, maybe when I'm older, is like, if I could, I would interview an author a week. Like, that would be so much fun to read and interview whoever, whatever book I'm reading, be able to just have them be like, all right, I'm done. Come on, let's talk about this book person who wrote it. That would be, that'd be a lot of fun. I would very much enjoy it. Well, don't forget, folks, every single Wednesday night here, you get this on a Thursday morning. You get the Not Fangraphs show with Mr. John Taylor and myself, where we talk all things Major League Baseball with Major League Baseball season here. Finally,
we're watching games that matter. We're sitting through the Rockies because we have to. But man, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to have a games that matter. It's beautiful to have a Pirates Nationals game where I'm just sitting there going, hell yeah, brother. Like,
and it's not just because Trey Lipscomb is killing it right out of the gate.
What is Trey Lipscomb?
The new everyday third baseman from the Tennessee Volunteers for the Washington Nationals.
Would he be best described as a baseball rat?
What is the context here?
Just generally, like, if you were to give a scouting report of Trey Lipscomb to someone who's never heard of him before, like, say, myself,
mm-hmm.
Beltre. Okay, that's... I have to feel like, based on the fact I've not heard of him before, that that's probably not accurate.
He's good. Trey Lipscomb, where did he get drafted? He was in the 2021 class, or 2022, excuse me. Where was Trey Lipscomb drafted? Now this is gonna, he moved up quickly. He was number 84 overall.
Okay, yeah. That's not bad.
No, he's good, and he waited his time. He started 1 year at Tennessee and had a great great final season and was part of that historic all-time great college baseball lineup. No, Trey Lipscomb's awesome. I did almost quote tweet where like, just the opening here now with Drew Gilbert and Trey Lipscomb being very close to being everydayers on two rivals in the NL East is like, I'm just going to be the Larry David gif every other weekend, it seems like, during the Brave season now, because I'm like, I don't know what to do here with Drew Gilbert and Trey Lipscomb up to bat.
You're going to have some trouble with that. Yeah. Thankfully, it's pretty clear that the rest of the NL East besides the Braves just flat out doesn't matter. So it should help, at least for this season, that every time they come up, you can be like, they can do literally whatever they want. It makes no difference at the end of the day.
It is what it is. But we have time for that. And as John and I were talking about here with the start of the Major League Baseball season, even if it is starting in Chicago in early April, which, what are we doing? Do the college baseball thing where the New York schools and all the northern schools have to go down south for the first month of the season so that these games can get in. And
Let me just say that as an East Coast baseball fan, how lovely I think it is to have to for my team the very first week of the season to spend it entirely in California playing night games.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome work. Thank you, Major League Baseball. I have watched a grand total of 7 innings of Red Sox baseball so far this year.
Ooh, maybe that's why, John, are we going to have to remove you from the Red Sox watch list based on this early start? Maybe that is the elixir to start off here?
To start our first of what will be many instances of John's negative Red Sox corner brought to you by your sponsor name here.
Mm-hmm.
it's a good start. I think there are definitely some good things to take away from the first week.
Well, hold on. If you're going to get into the Red Sox, hold on. Let me finish the opening here, and then we'll get it. We'll dive into the Red Sox. Hold on. We'll dive in. I'll give you the time it needs to talk about the Red Sox rotation that is actually good.
It's actually good.
So we'll talk about that in a second. But don't forget, folks, you can watch us on YouTube if you're watching us right now. Give us a thumbs up and comment, all that good stuff. YouTube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. You can email us with any future questions you might have for a future show, for John and myself at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. And then, of course, if you're a subscriber and you have not already done so, please, please, please make sure you hit that pause button right now and leave this show a 5-star rating and write us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or however you are listening. If you are new to the show, I hope you guys enjoy it. Baseball talk each and every week on this very show. So I appreciate y'all checking us out, and make sure you hit that subscribe button if you like what you hear today. And if you're a Red Sox fan, I think you're going to like what John is about to say. So John,
for the most part, I got really nothing negative to say here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start with this. It is such a relief after what has felt like 25 straight seasons, which is about, at this point, about how long the Chaim Bloom experience felt,
mm-hmm.
in just having to watch crappy pitcher after crappy pitcher get their head beat in, like right from the jump, too,
mm-hmm.
to get a rotation that at least the first one and almost one half times through, because now we've had one full turn through the rotation plus Brian Bayo and Nick Pivetta have now each made 2 starts, where not only have they looked good, but you can sense that there is a visible change in philosophy, in approach, in just in ways that I think if you're a Red Sox fan, you probably spent the last or the entirety of Bloom's tenure as GM, president of baseball operations, grand wizard, whatever, kind of holding your head and going, why don't things change? Why is there this dogged determination to keep trying the same stuff that doesn't work? And from the very first game of the season on opening day in Seattle, Brian Bayo against the excellent Luis Castillo, you could tell something was different because Brian Bayo did not throw a single 4-seam fastball in that entire game. And for some Red Sox fans will hear that and you know they'll know, like, yeah, that's a really big deal. For those who either do not follow the Red Sox or don't follow them all that closely, or you know, just if you're just smashing the go forward 15 seconds button so you can get to whatever else we'll talk about next.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Bayo, when he threw his 4-seamer last year, it had a batting average of .310 against a slugging percentage of .646. And an expected and a weighted on base average of .413 with an expected weighted on base average of .374. Those numbers are all really bad. He did not throw a competitive 4-seam fastball. Even though he threw it 95 and a half miles an hour on average, it was not a competitive pitch. And yet he threw it 540 times. It was his third most used pitch on the season. So far this year, through 2 turns in the rotation, he hasn't thrown a single one. And just in that alone, the ability of, and this is where the credit goes, I think, already to Craig Breslow, the new Pobo, and Andrew Bailey, the new pitching coach, last of the Giants, to see that, hey, this didn't work at all last year.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to figure out some 5D chess, well, what if we try to do this? Instead, just go, if that pitch doesn't work, just don't throw it. Literally, just do not throw it. If a pitch is bad, don't throw it. And like,
is Andrew Bailey just like the new Leo Mazzoni? Because it just seems like wherever he goes, you're just pencil in a better rotation than where.
And yeah. What I think is what's funny is the similarity of both San Francisco and Boston, two ownership groups rather, that have decided they don't really have any interest in funding a competitive baseball team. San Francisco seemingly got there by accident or just by happy coincidence. And I don't think it is really even that much of a coincidence that, you know, the Giants had that one year where they won 107 games or whatever it was. The Red Sox had their season under Bloom where they made it to the ALCS and were 2 wins away from the World Series. But those two seasons, that each of those seasons aside for both franchises, they looked more like a kind of .500 also ran that would end up finishing closer to last than they would to first. And I don't, but like, I mean, that's not Bailey's fault, but it's funny actually how much those franchises kind of feel similar in that regard. But with regards to Bailey, he did great work in San Francisco, and you can already tell there's better work being done in Boston, that there is, you know, similarly, a guy like Garrett Whitlock, where there have been meaningful, visible changes made in what he's done with regards to his extension, with regards to his pitch selection. I mean, you've already seen it. Granted, one start so far for Whitlock, it's impossible to say whether or not there's a pattern. His three most used pitches in order last season were his sinker, his changeup, and his sweeper. This year, changeup, sinker, slider, with the percentage values all changed, the velocity a little different, the movement, like there, you can see Nick Pivetta, similarly, a guy who, granted, some of this work began last year when he started throwing what he calls a whirly bird sweeper, which is just a really big sweeping slider that really got immediate results. He's still doing it. Again, there wasn't this sense of like, you know, the things that were working that were not working last year, we're just going to keep bashing our heads into the wall to make them work. It's no, let's try something different then. And so far that has worked out really well. This has been arguably the best rotation, if not pitching staff generally in baseball through the first week or so of the season. Granted, it helps that their first two teams faced were Seattle, which has never been an offensive powerhouse and definitely doesn't look like it so far, and Oakland, which, ugh, boy, the A's are really... if you have not watched an A's game this year, and I don't bother. Two, if you do tune in, if they happen to be playing your team, holy crap.
Hold on, Josh Stripling cooked today, I think.
I mean, great. They pitched really well today. West Coast getaway day games, always a rough one for the visiting team. But that is not a team. That is, because calling it a team would imply that there was some like thought process into constructing the roster, so with an end goal in mind. The only end goal for the A's is game 162, when they no longer have to be doing this. It is
flat. Did you see the leaked like photo of like whoever, like the worker at Oakland Coliseum?
No.
That little piece of paper that they were at, like, to make, like, do you know what I'm talking about, that was going around last night?
No, because as noted, I've been able to see all of one Red Sox game, and so I don't think I've been able to watch. I watched some of the condensed highlights from Tuesday night's game, but I think the powers that be at MLB would rather not put any attention on the ongoing farce that is the Athletics. So
I want to find it. I don't know how to search for it, but it was like a worker at the Oakland Coliseum of thing rules for working at the event, and like the attendance was like 3,500. Which is still just wild for now. I mean,
the bits of the, when I watch the condensed game, because it has they overlay all the audio from various sources, you could hear individual fans. Like you could straight, it was like a little league game.
An idea though, John. What if we make a West Coast trip to Oakland and we record a pod at a home Oakland A's game? And
I think the sound quality might be better than where I currently am. Like there might be less background.
Do we get escorted out?
I should say I am 100% in support of the A's fans who have correctly decided that there is no point to supporting this, that ownership fundamentally does not care about you and does not, what you do is not important to them. So stay away from this team.
I mean, they might be in Sacramento now, apparently, for the next 3 years. What are we doing? Like, what a mess. This is just...
I'm just going to keep going back to it. How Rob Manfred has allowed this to play out the way it has, and how he continues to allow it to play out the way it does, is so embarrassing for everyone involved. Like, the fans in Oakland do not deserve this. The players on that team, all of whom are simply trying to play baseball to the best of their abilities, because that is their job, and because... hopefully, for a lot of them, they won't be stuck with this franchise forever. All they're trying to do is play. They don't deserve this. No one deserves this embarrassment and indignity except for John Fisher, who deserves a lifetime's worth of it. And the only thing that gives me nourishment is that this is going to play out, I think, one of two ways. One, the A's will eventually get to Las Vegas, but the whole process will be so just dragged through the dirt, humiliating, that Fisher will not be able to take any real like comfort or solace from this. To say nothing of the fact that it's just it's very clear it's never going to be a good franchise with him in charge. Just never. He does not have the capacity to build a successful baseball team. The other option is that eventually Rob Manfred steps in and says, the A's can go to Oakland, you are not going to be the owner any longer, because this is not working at all. And essentially forces him to sell the team to some different consortium. And I think that's particularly an option if the money keeps being an issue and the stadium stuff keeps being an issue. Because honestly, the last thing Major League Baseball should want is a Major League Baseball team playing in literally Sacramento, in literally a minor league stadium.
Yeah.
The optics of that are beyond bad.
The NHL is like, oh, welcome to amateur hour. We've been doing this with the Arizona Coyotes for the last 15 years. I think they're playing at Arizona State right now still.
Yeah, I think they're playing at a college stadium.
Yes. Hey, maybe that's the next step. Maybe that's the last boss for Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball, to get them into college stadium.
Seriously, stick them in, have them move to whatever stadium the colleges in the Bay Area use for them, whatever the biggest one is.
Go be a banana slug for a couple of years.
But it's really sad what has happened to the A's, and that team is wretched. They're awful. I mean,
they sent down someone who's hit. Who did they send down who actually had a good weekend?
Ruiz.
Yeah.
For reasons that, David Force, the unfortunate man tasked with being the general manager of this pointless endeavor, like, said explicitly, like, he gave whatever reasons he had as to, like, you know, oh, you know, the story needs to work on blah, 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 or whatever. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? What is the point of this? The one thing I love is the ongoing conspiracy theory that Esturi Ruiz was sent down and Brent Rooker was unexpectedly benched for wearing rubber bracelets given out by a bar called The Last Dive that is has been an organizing force for a lot of the fan protests and a lot of the fan anger, and that the two players were being punished for even expressing any amount of solidarity with said bar. But I don't know if that's actually true. I'm going to go ahead and choose to believe it because, you know, fuck John Fisher, but think about that too. How sad is it that we're at the point with a major league franchise where you hear something like that and you go, that's not totally out of the realm of possibility?
Yeah.
That's how amateur hour everything is in Oakland at this point. Like, again, to say nothing of the actual play on the field, where having lost today, the Oakland A's are now 1-6 with a run differential of negative. They gave up a run today and did not score once. That's 44-15, a run differential of -29. That's not great. That's not what you want. I mean, look, it's not as bad as the Rockies, who are just, I don't understand how they keep finding new depths somehow. Like, the Rockies
I think it's just like, Jordan Montgomery signs, and then you look at just where things are the rest of the way, and you're just like, there's no path. Like, there, like, the Rockies had no choice. Like, there wasn't, you can talk yourself into the Pirates, you can talk yourself into maybe the Nationals not finishing last, you can maybe talk yourself into a couple. There's no path to the Colorado Rockies not being the worst team in the NL West.
No, absolutely none. And of course, I think I don't remember if we basically joked about it when Montgomery signed with the Diamondbacks. But I was like, this pretty much cements that the Rockies are going to lose 100 games.
Yeah,
because you can't. Every team in the NL West is at worst, aside from them, 500 or better.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... And then you watch them play, like, it's abominable. They have no pitching. They have absolutely no pitching. None. Nothing. Nothing. Like, they currently have a negative run differential of -33. And that will, I mean, they're in a rain delay right now against Chicago. So who knows if that game actually happens. But again, -33 through six games. That's unbelievably awful.
Rocktober, baby. Clairvoyant John.
Yes.
Which team's hot or terrible start will end up being who they are the rest of the way?
So, I think the easy one for terrible start, given that they quite literally don't have a win yet, is the Miami Marlins. They are 0-7, and for all intents and purposes, their season is over.
They've taken over the Mets.
And just to illustrate my point quickly with the joy of numbers, here is where the Marlins preseason postseason odds were per Fangraphs and their preseason wins projection. 81-81. With a 28.8% chance to make the postseason. Here is where those postseason odds are today, after losing to, and projections are today, after losing a laugher to the Angels. 76 and 86, 9.6. They lost 20 points of playoff percentage in a week. And that was not a, this is not a team that was expected to contend. Like 29% is like, like, again, that's a third of the time in our projections you make it in. A third of the time you don't, or two thirds of the time you don't. So they're already on the outside looking in. They're effectively finished already. They have dug themselves a 7-game hole for a team that I think most people and most projections looked at and said 500 at best. And it's not just the fact that they're 0-7. It's that everything about them just looks bad.
Yeah.
The pitching is bad. The lineup is, and the lineup, which we talked about throughout the offseason, is just continue to look at it and going, they're not actually serious with this, right? They're going to do something more, right? Well, they didn't. And now you're seeing what the end result is. The defense is bad. Like, there's it doesn't feel, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine earlier today. Again, a team that does not, an organization that does not feel like there is a purpose in mind. Like, the only guiding principle for the Miami Marlins is, how cheaply can we assemble this product? And you're seeing what that looks like. It's called 0-7, and you're getting your heads beaten in by every team you're facing. Like, that first series against the Pirates, I already showed you right there, that bullpen blew every single lead it got its hands on. And that was supposed to be one of the strengths of this team. The other, of course, being the starting rotation. And I'll give them something for the starting rotation. I will say, losing Yuri Perez before the start of the season, along with Edward Cabrera, along with Braxton Garrett, about as bad a start as you can imagine. But it's not like they're relying on a cast of, it's not like this is the Rockies rotation. There's still Jesus Luzardo. There's still
Trevor Rogers, Ryan Weathers.
Trevor Rogers. There's like Ryan Weathers was a top prospect. AJ Puck was once like a top 10 draft pick. He had an amazing spring. So did Weathers. You know, it wasn't hard to look at that spring that they were having, particularly those two, and going, okay, like, it sucks to lose Perez and Garrett and Cabrera, but they've got the guys to make it through this. No, it turns out they don't really. And, you know, I am sure the Marlins, you heard it here first, the Marlins are not going to go 0-162.
No.
But they have, but like I said, they have effectively torpedoed their hopes at having any real playoff contention this season.
Would you say it's an effectively wild start for the Marlins?
It's not, definitely not effective, that's a thing. On the other side of things, in terms of...
You know what, can we also, final thing on the Marlins, do you know how hard it is to have a worse start than the Chicago White Sox? And the Marlins have had a worse start.
The Marlins have had a worse start than the Rockies. They've had a worse start than every team in baseball. Because them and the Mets are the only winless teams left. The Mets at least have the excuse that they've lost their last two games to the perpetual rain that now exists across the New York tri-state area. But on the other side of things, I we're going to talk about the Yankees later, so I'll save that. But they've looked very, very good so far. All the uniforms are awful, but...
Just don't sweat in the Yankees ones, especially. Anyway, the Tigers. Yeah,
the Tigers, I think, have looked good. It's. I think it's too early to say with that one in particular, because they've only been able to play four games, also because of weather. I think the other team that you're definitely worried about to a certain degree is Houston.
Hmm.
Because similarly, you know, that was a team where I think you could look at that roster and start to see some of the potential weak points, like. You know, particularly once they knew they lost Verlander, they lost Jose Urquidy, and they lost, they'd already lost Luis Garcia. You know, you could see like, okay, the rotation is not super solid, and I don't really love the back part of this lineup. And there's a lot of weight being borne by Jose Abreu, like turning, like stopping whatever decay he's currently experiencing.
Yeah.
And I think too, there existed those concerns about the bullpen, where it's like, Josh Hader's awesome, Brian Abreu is a fantastic setup man. The rest of that group, you didn't feel super comfortable about that group, and you're already
going to have to acquire a third of the Chicago White Sox sooner than expected.
Yeah, like I don't think this necessarily cripples Houston by any stretch of the imagination. It probably narrows things a little bit. And again, they using preseason versus current odds. Houston entered the season projected by Fangraphs to go 91-71 with an 86% chance to make the playoffs and a 62% chance to win the division. As of today, I don't think Houston is playing today. No, they're playing at 8:00 tonight, Wednesday night against Toronto after another hard, brutal loss for them with Hader giving up a two-run home run to Davis Schneider in a save situation. Now projected 88-74, so that's 3 wins off, with their playoff chance dipping down to 74% and their division odds down to 51%. So they're still in a decent position, but I think you do start to worry that it's like maybe that team needs a little more than what it's already got. And how much realistically, it, like a guy like Verlander, you know, six years ago, him coming back makes a real difference. The version of Verlander that we've seen in the last couple of years is not that same guy anymore. Still very good, but not the immediate shot in the arm. And then I guess I'll, again, also on the positive side, the Dodgers have gotten off to a very good start, but I think that was kind of expected. Do you want to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates? The 5-0 Pittsburgh Pirates?
Oh, also, I'm a little concerned with what the Astros do. I mean, are they going to be able to find a victory when they don't throw a no-hitter? Like, that's right now the answer.
I was going to say,
the one
win they have was their 30-year-old rando, like, eighth starter just throwing a no-hitter, which ruled. That was a great moment. I did love
the immediate baseball, or, the immediate baseball Twitter is just like, has he turned elite? I don't think so. I think no.
Look, no hitters happen. Like,
yes, just don't overthink this. Just enjoy it, even though the Gray City uniforms. Yeah. Don't wear those. But no, the Pirates.
Here's a take: Houston doesn't have good uniforms at all.
No,
they need to.
And I had high hopes when they went back to the better colors for the, like. I mean, they had. I mean, I don't know. Is the BGO Bagwell one the best? I think those might end up being the best.
They're okay, they just need to go back to the really old school like tequila sunrise ones, not the kind of like the ones they have now that look like batting practice tops with stripes off the side. Terrible look.
I text you, I think, once every 3 days. I'm irrationally mad about the Braves uniforms are horrific. They drive me up the wall. They suck. But anyway, I'm not going to do this.
The uniforms generally where now when a player sweats, it looks like someone has dumped a whole cooler of Gatorade on them. It's
the Mariners names are like written in like type like 17 font. Like they're so small. If you look the side by side, I can't. It's driving me nuts.
I've had a lot of frustration in watching games, and because I usually watch my games on mute just because I don't particularly care about the commentary, and also because like if I'm watching it like with my girlfriend there, it's like I don't want to make her listen to a baseball game she has no interest in.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like if I'm not hearing what a player's name is, I need to look up and be like, oh, okay. And before it's like I look at the back of the jersey and the name is big enough where I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's whoever that is. And now it's like I'm really just squinting and going, I think that's a B. It feels like going to to an eye doctor and taking the stupid chart test. Where I'm just sitting there being like X2 pound sign. Like
that's one of those humbling things, man.
First
optometrist appointment where you're
37 years old. So
you're failing.
My eyesight. I'm 37 years old. I've spent a large amount of my life staring directly at screens. Like it's a miracle I'm not blind, but the new uniforms remain bad, but
well, let's talk about the Pirates because, I mean, I'm over here writing a piece on Tennessee Saturday morning and I'm like, John, the Pirates are good. The Pirates lineup, I'm all the way back in. They're over here taking reclamation projects now with Joey Bart entering the fray. But look, man, the Pirates, they're doing their beginning of the year. Everything might be okay stuff, but buy or sell, the Pirates are going to make it to 500 this year. I think they're going to make it, John.
So I think in order to buy, there are a couple things, obviously, that need to continue. One is O'Neill Cruz has to stay healthy. So much of what they were doing last year, last April, when they got off that hot start before, I think was just having a super athlete and a super hitter like Cruz in that lineup. Once he got hurt, I think everyone kind of realized, oh, this is probably not going to go on much longer. O'Neill Cruz has to stay healthy. Two, they need to call up Paul Skeens like tomorrow. Like you cannot, because if this kid is as good as he showed at LSU, as good as he's shown in the minors, as good as he's shown in spring training, you cannot waste him in the minor leagues throwing pitches for no purpose.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
High school pick. who is like, oh, he's, you know, he's got the raw stuff, but he really needs to work on X, Y,
I mean, Jackson Holiday's pushing the envelope too.
Yeah. I could spend a whole hour ranting about how the Orioles are doing everything, every one of their fans a disservice by pretending that Jackson Holiday still needs to work on things in the minors. That is such clear service time manipulation that I'm amazed that Holiday's agents haven't filed some kind of grievance. Maybe they still will. But with Skeens, there's no argument. This dude doesn't need to work on anything.
Yeah.
He throws 100 miles an hour with wipeout breaking balls. You know, there is no argument at all that he should not be in the major leagues right now. Particularly when, in the case of the Pirates, you're giving starts instead to Bailey Falter. And I know they've been great so far in, well, not great. That's too strong. I know they've been acceptable so far in two starts. Marco Gonzalez and Martin Perez. Those are perfectly fine back of the rotation options to have, who just eat 150 innings and be roughly league average while doing it. But they should not be standing in the way of a guy like Skeens being in this rotation. And that's the thing, you already have a good example of that in Jared Jones. The Pirates gave Jared Jones a rotation spot out of spring training. They booted Ronsi Contreras from the rotation, Luis Ortiz from the rotation, and gave Jones a start. And what did he do? He struck out 10 dudes against the Marlins in 5 2/3 with like two dozen swings and misses. And he's not as good as Skeens. You know, give the kid an opportunity, because this pitching staff is not good enough otherwise to carry this thing through. Not if you're going to give 25 plus starts apiece to Gonzalez and Perez and Bailey Falter. You know, that's not going to work. So you need to get Skeens up as soon as you can. And
I think we're going to see Skeens this summer.
I honestly think there's a chance we see him before the end of May, or before the beginning of May rather. Because again, there's no point. And when you're a team like the Pirates, when every win is so much more valuable to you because you're on that marginal cusp of contention, you know, every little thing Skeens can give you from this point forward is the difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing for the Pirates is you look at the guys who are performing in their lineup right now, Connor Joe, Michael A. Taylor. I saw the name Alika Williams and I'm like, that's not a real person. And I'm going to keep going as if they're not a real person anyway. Apologies to Alika Williams. Like, that's not going to hold. Like, Connor Joe is a platoon bat. Michael A. Taylor he played really well in Minnesota last year, but I think in a clear backup role and as a great.
But him in the nine spot's okay.
That's the thing, though. I think you need to lengthen this lineup by one more reasonable, like just bankable bat. You know,
yeah.
I think some of that is.
But that's a good place to be. In there, like, that's something you could do this summer. You can clean that up
at least one, because I think there are a few worries I have. One is that Andrew McCutchen has gotten off to a super slow start. He's 37 years old. You know, he was good for the most part last year, but who knows how much fuel is left in that gas tank at this point in time. Part of it is maybe this is finally the Ke'Bryan Hayes breakout. He's looked phenomenal so far. But you have many more seasons in the past suggesting that this is, you know, that he is not really anything more than a league average bat. Henry Davis, who's had a good start as well so far, but you know, only 24 years old, first exposure to the majors for an extended period of time, really only going to give you stuff with the bat. I think you can definitely expect better out of like Jack Sawinski. I don't think he's going to have an OPS plus of 2 for the rest of the season.
Well, he's got a -7 WRC plus at this point. I don't think that continues.
The production you're getting so far, like Henry Davis's OPS plus is 117. O'Neill Cruz, 127. Brian Reynolds, 173. Like, that's going to come down. I don't really know that you can expect Davis and Cruz to do much more than that. Ke'Bryan Hayes, 169. Similarly, I expect that to come down a decent amount. You know, whereas the guys who are underperforming, Sawinski should be better. But, like, Edward Olivares is probably a league average bat. At the end of the day, Jared Triolo is a league average bat. And those are useful, good things to happen, particularly on the Pirate side of things, because they cost roughly $0 to do it. But there's not really... Unless Hayes is making that leap, or unless Davis is way better than we expected him to be, or unless Reynolds or Cruz somehow have an extra gear to find, there's not really that middle of the order bat I think you need in order to take the step from below 500 pseudo contender to actually in this thing in the NL Central. And I don't know who that is to start. Like, I think it's way too early probably to try to think about that or figure it out. This is where I think, had the Pirates actually been willing to, you know, spend, something like adding a guy like JD Martinez would have been ideal, instead of reuniting with McCutchen maybe, or, you know, targeting someone like, I don't know, I don't have the list of this winter's free agents in front of me, I'm just trying to think of, you know, reasonable bats who would have been there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that this roster as currently constructed is good enough. You probably have to take some kind of step forward. You do have to do something. The good news with the Pirates is they have a very good farm system, a very deep one. It's not a farm system that I think, is really ready to add any hitters to the major league level currently. Maybe Tamar Johnson, but no, he feels still too far away. I mean, their best prospects are Skeens. Jared Jones is currently in the rotation. And Bubba Chandler, who is a guy that they're probably going to, he's a high school draft pick out back in 2021. More likely than not, we're going to see him next year. Similarly, Tamar Johnson, a high school pick out of Mays High School, which is somewhere in Georgia. I don't know if you
know. Oh, I know Mays.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But again, a high school pick in 2022, unless he absolutely sets the minor leagues on fire in the next 2 months, I can't imagine he's a guy who's going to get any call-up consideration either. You know, the farm system is not going to be, beyond Skeens, there's nothing really coming in that farm system who's going to have a potential star impact as a hitter. So you need to go out and find it. You need to go out. You have a lot of depth in the farm
system. The Marlins are torpedoed. Just go call the Marlins. See what the fish are offering.
Make a Godfather offer for Jazz Chisholm. See where that gets you. That'd be really fun. Imagine Jazz Chisholm and O'Neill Cruz in the same lineup and in the same infield. That would rule. That would be so much fun. And I think that's really the other thing. It's more of an intangible.
We all know that Jazz Chisholm's going to be a Padre at the deadline. What are we doing? We all know.
I think that's the other thing with the Pirates is you have a fan base that has been conditioned at this point to hope, to have no hope, to expect nothing, to think that, you know, even if there's a hot start, to know the fall comes eventually. Because this ownership group, particularly the ownership group, the despicable Bob Nutting, has not and continues to not invest in making this roster better. So more than anything, I think that's part of it too. You need to do something to show the fans, no, we're going to take advantage of this. It's calling up Skeens. It's adding someone to the lineup. It's doing the things that suggest that you're not just going to sit there and go, oh, well, this is nice, but if we get there, that's great. But if we don't, that's okay too, because we've all saved money in the process. You know, that's what I think it will take for me to believe that the Pirates are for real. They've got to make the moves to make the roster better, because things have been good so far, but I don't really know that any of it feels sustainable.
But here's the best part, if you're a Pirates fan. The NL Central maybe sucks. And like, you have the Brewers, who we'll talk about their new potential superstar in a second. But like, we were talking before the season got started, John. People were like, the numbers kind of like the Cardinals to bounce back and win the NL Central. And you're like, well, we just watched the Cardinals be the worst team in the NL Central last year. And the rotation is also a huge problem for the St. Louis Cardinals. The Reds don't seemingly just can't get out of their own way, and like betting on the Reds.
They can't stay healthy. They've lost Matt McClain, TJ Friedl. Noelvi Marte is not hurt. He's suspended. But like, that's three guys who are going to be, in Friedl and McClain in particular, and ideally Marte at some point, were going to be really important to that lineup.
And the Cubs didn't do enough. The Cubs did some stuff, but the Cubs didn't do enough to be like, hey, we're the favorites, and like, they have the best manager in the league now. But like, I don't know. If you're the Pirates, you can... I just think they're going to hang around. I think the NL Central is bad, and they're going to hang around.
I think we had figured that whoever wins the NL Central is probably going to do it with somewhere in the neighborhood of like 83 to 86 wins.
Yeah.
You know, barring one of these teams just randomly going on a heater. And right now, I mean, look at the Fangraphs projections right now. St. Louis, 83 wins. Chicago, 82 wins. Milwaukee, 82 wins. Pittsburgh, 81 wins. Cincinnati, 80 wins. Three games separating first from last in the projections right now. Every team in that division has a better than 25% chance to make the playoffs. Every team in the division has a better than 13% chance to win the division. Like, the Pirates division winning odds are 16% right now. Start of the season, that was probably closer to, I should be able to tell you exactly.
Two.
It was 8.8%. They've already doubled their odds of winning the division in a week. That's not nothing, you know? But it's on ownership. It's on that ownership group, or the despicable Bob Nutting, to make that a reality. Because this is a hot start and a good one, but that's all it is right now. A hot start, you know? It's given them a potential leg up on other teams, or at least put them back into the conversation. So they need to do something with that.
Go Pirates, man. I'm going to watch a lot of Pirates this year. On the other side, though, the Yankees open 5-0 for the first time since 1992, John Taylor.
Yes. I hate it. I pretend I do not see it. It's weird too, because with the Yankees, you know, we talked about before when Gerrit Cole got hurt that, you know, there were three guys on this team who had to stay healthy for this team to be a realistic contender: Judge, Soto, Cole. Immediately they lose Cole. The good news is for them, obviously, that it looked like Cole had avoided a serious elbow injury. Looks like he'll be back at some point in the early summer. Fingers crossed if you're a Yankees fan. Also, as it turns out, Juan Soto is really, really good at baseball. Who would have thought?
Juan Soto is.
Someone will be right there. Yeah, what a wild idea. Juan Soto, very, very good at baseball. You should put Juan Soto on your baseball team. Yeah, what a crazy idea. I love the fact that it just seems like his particular approach to hitting is actually seems to be rubbing off on the rest of the team. And I think, too, what even because I mean, I'm not gonna lie, this is all going to lean toward the intangible, because that's really all you can talk about after like six or seven games or whatever it is. There's really no numbers I can point to that are going to make any difference. Mm-hmm. That series against Houston, I think the Yankees trailed in every single game at some point or another. Either they were tied or trailing in every single game. They came back and won all of them. Similarly, today against Arizona, they were down. They were tied going into the 10th, score two in the top of the 10th, give up two in the bottom of the 10th. Last year's Yankees teams don't win those games in Houston. Last year's Yankees team giving up two to Arizona in the bottom of the 10th probably loses it right then and there. Instead, they come back and score two more in the 11th, give up one in the 5th, one in the 11th, it's also really hard not to score with the Manfred man, but they hang on for the win anyway. And I think if you're a Yankees fan, there already just feels like a night and day difference in the way this team responds to tough situations. Because I think that's something we talked about a lot last season, where it looked like the Yankees, anytime something bad happened, just immediately folded, immediately just gave up. I want to say that team had one of the worst records in the league last year when they were trailing after like seven or so innings or whatever it was. I'd look it up, but I don't know if people really enjoy the dead time when I'm just kind of trying to figure out a split on Baseball Reference when, you know, in the middle of talking about something. But point being, there does seem to be a different vibe there as to, you know, the way this Yankees team goes about it. Again, adding Juan Soto turns out to be a really good move. Some other important things: I think Anthony Volpe has looked really, really good so far. Seems to have some newfound plate patience. That is obviously immense for them. If he can be the number one prospect that, you know, everyone kind of expected him to be right out of the gate last year. At this point, it also, I think, a lot hinges on continued health for Nestor Cortez and Carlos Rodon, neither of whom has pitched particularly well so far, or at least, you know, hasn't been dominant, but they've been able to keep the Yankees in games. They need both of them to stay healthy, particularly again with Cole sidelined for the time being.
You know who could they afford to lose? Because, I mean, DJ LeMahieu now, broken foot. So he's gone for a while. And I don't know how he comes back from that. As someone who broke their foot, it's not an easy rehab and getting back and trusting it. And
it's tough,
too,
because LeMahieu is already on the downswing anyway, as a guy who's really looked increasingly kind of stiff and not really with the same bat.
Donaldson retires, LeMahieu out. Like, I don't know what they do at third.
Well, right now it's Oswaldo Cabrera, which is working out. And again, too early to get and to say it with any real confidence or certainty that his hot start is something they can keep up. But that's also another place where the Yankees really need that to continue, because, like you said, there's nothing else really there at the moment. And
Volpe hitting helps, I guess.
And that's the thing. That's why you need guys like Volpe to hit. That's why you need Juan Soto to be Juan Soto. That's why you need, if nothing else, at least baseline competence out of a guy like Alec Verdugo. Again, something we talked about with last season, the Yankees got nothing out of left field last year for all intents and purposes. Even just the step up to league average offense and league average defense from Verdugo, massive difference. Being able to get consistent innings out of Marcus Stroman, another guy who really needs to stay healthy for them, makes a huge difference. Being able to get a full season in the bullpen out of, you know, the combo of guys I really like with their stuff, Ian Hamilton and Nick Birdie, makes a huge difference. Luis Gill, if he can stay healthy, a real potential difference maker in their rotation until Cole is healthy. Like, you know, and especially I think it helps to Toronto off to a shaky start. Tampa, Baltimore, both good as expected. Boston maybe a little better than expected, but there's definitely still room for the Yankees to be at or near the top of this division. They're off to a really good start. And, you know, for as much as they, it's just a hot start, those wins are already banked. You know, they're already 6-1. Those wins are already in the books. You know, and that kind of positivity, again, to go back to the intangibles, you can feed off that. That'll carry you. That'll boost you. When they come back to Yankee Stadium for their home opener on Thursday, assuming the weather ever lets up here, they're going to be doing it with good vibes. Yankees fans are going to be coming to the stadium happy, excited, eager to see them play. That in itself is worth a lot. Because again, one of the things about the Yankees last year really seemed like a wretched watch. Like a completely unfun, unpleasant group of, not to say personally, but just a team that did not inspire anything approaching fun or enjoyment or passion or excitement or even really hope in a lot of senses. I know a lot of, and granted, Yankees fans are spoiled babies, but there was, I think, a pervasive sense when that Yankees team went down at any point in the game to go, okay, well, that's done. This team has zero fight in it whatsoever. They've shown more fight in the first week than they showed all of last season. And that definitely is the kind of thing that can carry you. It's even through the rough patches, because you know in the back of your mind, you know, we've done this before. We did this at the start of the season. No reason we can't keep doing it. But again, it is
you
all
love it, John.
It's really why does God test me this way to put, you know,
he
every,
gives his hardest battles to his strongest men and women.
I am one of his weakest soldiers. I am not cut out for this. I am not cut out for a good Yankees team. I haven't had to think about a truly good Yankees team in like a decade. It's been great. Like, I don't have to worry about what October is going to drag in front of me. There's always been that sense of, like, even in the good Yankees teams that made it into October, I've been like, oh, well, number one, the Astros will be there, so they're going to wipe the floor with them, and then that'll be that. And number two, I don't, like, you know, and, you know, I'll go back and look, because I don't want it to be spouting off like a weirdo, but the last truly great Yankees team was probably the 2009 World Series team. Probably. I mean, the 2018 and 2019 teams were very good. But the 2018 team obviously ran into a much better Red Sox team that the franchise weirdly ceased to exist after that point in time. Don't know what happened to them, but that's okay. They left on a high note. The 2019 team ran into a much better Astros team. Them's the breaks, I suppose. And the 2022 team also won. But that's the thing. Again, the Astros were always there waiting to club them over the head. You know, you never really, I don't think even Yankees fans really got the sense that it's like, oh, this team's actually going to do anything, because the Astros were always standing there going, hello. And then again, just clubbing them over the head. So it's been nice. As a dedicated Yankees hater, it's been so nice, even when they do make the playoffs, to go, eh, not really worried about this. They'll be gone in about a week and a half. And then they are. I need this to continue. I can't deal with, especially this fan, I can't deal with these fans if they have good things happen to them. They don't deserve it. They don't deserve it.
Well, speaking of fans who don't deserve it, as we'll end on this, John Taylor.
Okay.
Why can't the Twins have nice things? Royce Lewis, just,
I don't know, man.
It just can't happen. Like, at one point, I wonder too, like, I thought about this with different, like, Atlanta and Tennessee stuff over the years, where there's just some things where you're like, is it better for all parties and the fans' mental health to just move on? Like, I understand, yeah. like just, I can't do this anymore. Like, you've got to be somebody else's problem. I can't, like, this is bad. Every year, we're like, Royce Lewis is awesome. And Royce Lewis just can't stay healthy, and the Twins are just it
broke my heart when he had that. He gave a quote after hurting himself on opening days, like, I guess I'm just too electric.
Yes,
like, yeah, man, you are, because you rule. You're a phenomenal, like, just, it's like, get people forget, some people forget, this man was the number one pick of the draft in the year he was drafted.
Yes,
numero uno, and with good damn reason. You know, he was a phenomenal player coming into the draft. And yet the body betrays him. And it's a real shame, especially because with regards to the Twins, any path to them to legitimate contention, not just winning their joke of a division, but actually hanging around in October and getting toward a World Series involved Royce Lewis being at the peak of his powers. You saw it last year when he had his September out of the gods and gave you that feeling of like, oh crap, the Twins can actually have a chance to do this. Didn't work out. As always, Houston, the ogre in the American League, clubbing teams over the head and dragging them behind the building to eat them. But the Twins need a healthy Royce Lewis to be real. And granted, he's not out for the season. He's we don't know when he'll be back. You know, certainly many things can change and happen between now and October. And for as much as it hurts Minnesota to lose him, it doesn't put them in a position where they're now doomed to lose the division. Yeah. That being said, like we just talked about a little bit earlier, Detroit has looked good so far. Cleveland hangs around. Shane Bieber has turned the clock back to 2018 somehow. I haven't really figured that out yet. Kansas City, a little iffy. We're just gonna act like the other team in the AL Central doesn't exist. Just, I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk about the White Sox this year unless I am absolutely forced to. Like, unless there's some really damn good reason to talk about the White Sox. We're just gonna pretend they don't exist, because
unless they do something funny. I mean, they might do some trades. They might, like, Luis Robert is good. Luis Robert might be a superstar.
They had a moment in a game the other day where it got delayed. It was a game against the Braves, because yes. Their first base coach just disappeared randomly. And it turns out you need to have a first base coach on the field I didn't know you couldn't just keep going without a first base coach and be like, well, we'll figure it out if someone actually.
Like, they're all professionals. They should be able to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like they're missing an umpire and it's like, well, we kind of need someone to call strike. Yeah. It's like,
actually, that'd be more fun, because I think I would be curious if your baseball players are better or worse running the bases without first base and third base.
Let's be honest too, like, what are the odds any White Sox player was going to get to first base anyway? Like, isn't that feels like a problem where you saw, like, you cross that bridge if you need to, you know? It doesn't really make sense to make everyone slow down just because the White Sox can't figure their crap out. But look, the non-Twins, non-White Sox teams in that division, they're not world beaters by any stretch, but they look at least like they will be competitive to some degree or another. This is not a division that the Twins can cakewalk to, at least, you know, as currently constructed. A healthy Royce Lewis makes them that much better. He's a real difference maker on that roster. Without him, it puts that much more pressure on Carlos Correa, Byron Buxton, two other guys who they really, really need to stay healthy. Like, it just feels like there's a lot of
Carlos Correa fell off on the national spectrum. Like, when was the last time you heard about Carlos Correa? Like, him leaving Houston,
he flunked one physical and then flunked a subsequent physical to annul two separate and 10 plus year deals. That could not have been a fun few months for him.
And he was dealing with the Minnesota cold. Royce Lewis is out. Our Pets heads are falling off.
But
they're still going to win the division and get bounced in the first round.
And again, Royce Lewis is obviously the bigger injury, but losing Anthony DeSclafani too. Not a guy who was expected to be anything close.
Gone for the year.
But a guy who is hopefully going to provide them with some useful back of the rotation innings, maybe some help out of the bullpen if needed. Completely gone for the year now. Puts the pressure too on a guy like Louis Varland, who has really, really great stuff, but has not really put it together at the major league level yet. That's a dude they're now counting on to take the ball every fifth day at this point. You know, the whatever starting rotation depth they have, and this is not a team that had a ton of starting rotation depth in the first place. Losing DeSclafani really, really hurts you there. I mean, your full rotation, Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, Louis Varland, and Chris Paddock, who made his first start today against Milwaukee and looked okay. But then beyond that, you know, you're looking down at a Triple A for them. It's Simeon Woods Richardson, Matt Cantorino, Brent Hedrick, good prospects, but, you know, not necessarily guys I think the Twins really want to drag up there. David Festa too, I should note, who, unless they feel like they're ready, you don't want to find yourself in a position where you're promoting guys, not because you feel like they're ready, but because you desperately have holes you need to fill.
Yeah.
You know, in an ideal world, the Twins get something out of Paddock, get something out of Varland, get enough out of the two of them, at least to make it to midseason, and then adjust from there and be like, do we have to add a starter? Can we call a guy up? Like, what do we need to do? It's just anytime an injury like what happened to Royce Lewis happens, even if he's only out for a month, it lowers the ceiling that much more. And for a team that already didn't have a particularly high ceiling, unless everything worked exactly to plan and everyone stayed perfectly healthy, not ideal. The only real silver lining for the Twins is, again, this is the AL Central. You know, they're not surrounded by stallions and thoroughbreds. Like, the other teams have their notable flaws too. But it's definitely not how you want the season to start if you're the Twins. And great, they had a nice win today against Milwaukee. They came back and won it late. It's funny, we don't even talk about it. They don't have Joanne Duran right now either, another guy who is instrumental to their success. Again, rough start. They've survived it so far. But they're at that point now where you never want to be at this point already in like the first week of the season. You can't afford any more injuries, really. You can't afford any more problems. Like, you need to stay healthy and together and with it from this point forward. And again, for a team relying on Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton in particular, that's not really where you want to be, where it's like, those guys cannot afford to be lost from the lineup because you've already lost the most impactful hitter in it. Not a great place for the Minnesota Twins to be.
But they'll still be maybe okay. They're not gonna be bad. They'll be fine.
No, no, and that's the thing. Like, even a bad version of this Twins team is still like somewhere in that 75-80 win like area. And that's if things go catastrophically wrong. It's just that, again, it's just that the
ceiling... I just don't think it ever does. When does it ever go catastrophically wrong for the Twins?
They were like 5 years ago, right? When they were like, the year that they finished with like 100 losses, and then their reward was Royce Lewis.
Yeah. What year was that?
When they lost 103 games.
What year?
So, 2016.
That's Lewis what I'm saying. That was 8 years ago.
Okay, fine. I mean, look, they've been any... I mean, well, they lost 89 games in 2021. It's been a slow...
Did they really? Climb.
Yeah. People forget. People are saying, but people forget. It's been a slow, steady climb from that point forward. But
I would love to know their average season for like the last 15 years. I bet you it's somewhere so close to the 500.
They have a lot of sneaky, terrible seasons in there.
That's what I'm saying. They've had some good ones, and then they balance out. I bet you they're somewhere right there in the middle. I don't know where it is, but
yeah, I would guess it all evens up. But I mean, like the last years of the Ron Gardenhire era were awful.
Brad Radke not walking through that door.
No, Denard or Joe Mauer is not walking through that door.
Shane Stewart.
We're gonna end this by naming some
like, Michael Kadire
wins. Michael Kadire is a good one. Josh Willingham is not walking.
Josh Willingham is one I have not. I used to rake with him in baseball games. Like Josh Willingham was one of my favorites. I raked with Josh Willingham.
The ham is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Hold on there, John. Oh, man. Well, John Taylor, thank you as always, my friend. Don't forget, folks, if you like today's episode, guess what? Every week here during the Major League Baseball season and even in the offseason, all that good stuff, John and I talking all things Major League Baseball. So make sure you leave us a 5-star rating, write us a review, and why you like listening to John and myself talking all things Major League Baseball on your preferred podcast player, whether that's Apple, Spotify, wherever. And if you're watching us on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, comment, like the video, all that good stuff, with the full episodes, clips, shorts, all that good stuff on that one as we close in on 2,000 subs on the YouTube channel. So youtube.com/JaseThomasPodcast and all that good stuff. But John Taylor, thank you as always, my friend, and we will talk again next week. Sounds good.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.